Hi, I'm Steve Gates, Dr. Sky, reporting here on TeenTalkNetwork.com with another interesting edition of the Dr. Sky Show. As we always search around the world for interesting newsmakers, those in science that are the movers and shapers of science today and tomorrow. Today's interview, we certainly have, I feel, a very exciting guest. I'd like to welcome to the microphones of TeenTalkNetwork.com a gentleman that I think you'll enjoy speaking about meteors and the possibility of strange sounds emanating from meteors similar to what we may call sonic booms. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce to TeenTalkNetwork.com Dan Vinkovich, who is a graduate student at the University of Kentucky as he pursues his Ph.D. in astrophysics. And with that said, good afternoon and welcome, Mr. Vinkovich.
Oh, hello and hello to all listeners.
Well, thank you for joining us today. My videographer, Rob Kritkowski, and I were, of course, very involved with the Leonid meteor shower this year, and we had the good fortune on some of the other radio stations that I report around the nation to not only witness the Leonids in their splendor, but we also got an opportunity, both of us, in two different locations, seeing a bright fireball of the one of the many that were out there shooting across the Arizona skies. And as you know, Mr. Vinkovich, you know that my videographer, Rob, captured something on tape, but simultaneously in Payson, Arizona, I heard what seemed like to me, and I've heard these before, the sound of something like a sonic boom.
Yeah, I listened to that recording, and when you say sonic boom, you immediately imply several physical processes. What makes this recording interesting, the whole event interesting, is that for an sonic boom, you need several minutes for the sound to reach you. So if you see an emitter, you need to wait a minute, 2 minutes, depends on distance, and then you would hear a sound. It's like thunder after lightning. The problem is that in that recording, and according to your report, report of your colleague, this sound happened almost simultaneously.
That's correct.
And that's something puzzling for astrophysicists and astronomers.
Well, I'm curious if you could elaborate on this. I've heard sonic booms from military aircraft and planes like that, the space shuttle. What happened when I was viewing it, and I can only speak about my sighting, is that as I looked up into the skies, I noticed the fireball, bright as the planet Jupiter. And all of a sudden, as I saw the fireball seemingly explode in the sky, I heard within seconds the sound of what was a crack and what sounded like rolling thunder. And I'm just wondering, maybe I saw another fireball, or maybe the fireball that I saw was not the cause of this, because typically, Mr. Vinkovich, how long would it take for this sound from where these meteors are to actually get to the ground?
Yeah, so it depends on distance, but in case of Leonids, and we are talking about Leonids here, the problem is that they're very fragile and they burn at very high altitude. So it's very uncommon for Leonids to create sonic boom at all, because simply they do not reach this dense layer of atmosphere. It's not so impossible, but in the case of Leonids, you would not hear sound like this. So when I went through the recording, I can hear just short boom, like a deep pop. And
right.
What's really intriguing is that little crack before that pop.
Yeah.
The sound travels with constant speed, the speed of sound. So if you have an object creating this sound about 70 miles away, and that's approximately the distance that you had to that meter, then it really takes minutes for this sound. A chance that there was another Leonid prior to that one, before that one, and that this sound just overlaps with another meter is very, very low. This probability is very low simply because Leonids have to be very, very bright, really, really bright, to create a sonic boom. They have to be brighter than a full moon or so. So this crack is an intriguing part of your experience, because this implies that the sound was actually an electrophonic sound. That's a completely different story and different physical process. Usually when I talk about these issues, I say that the oldest still unsolved astronomical mystery. because I found some old records, more than 300 years old, about sounds like this, when people recognized that problem of sound propagation, problem of that simultaneous sound, because they knew even 300 years ago that sound requires minutes to reach you if a gun or something very loud or right. lightning happens very far away. So they knew the sound requires significant time delay, but some people reported sound simultaneous to a very bright fireball over Italy in 1676. So one Italian astronomer called Geminiano Montanari calculated the distance and he knew the speed of sound, and he realized that fireball he witnessed and people witnessed all over Italy was really, really high and traveled really, really fast. Back then they didn't know what the meters are, nothing about that physics. They even didn't know about the most of things that we today understand as something normal. But he knew about the speed of sound, and he calculated simply pure math triangulation. He calculated distance and speed of that fireball, and he noticed that some people said they heard simultaneous sound. So that's the first written record of this phenomenon. Now, 300 years later, we don't know much more than this. The only thing that we know, in addition to that story, is that the sound is probably created by an electric field disturbance. So a meter somehow, and that's the trickiest part in the whole story, a meter creates very strong electromagnetic disturbance. And when this disturbance reaches you, the ground level, and this disturbance travels with the speed of light, so it's almost simultaneous for you, right. It creates sounds on ordinary objects around you. And there are two ways how to create these sounds. And that's, again, thing that it's not very clear. It can create a sound either by vibrating objects. It's like when you have some plastic and then a piece of rubber, and then it becomes electric when it has static electricity, something like that, and then you can have pieces of paper and attract them, things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar process. But there is another way how to create sound. If you have very sharp conductor, very sharp metal objects, they can distort local electric field. And there's a really, really tiny thing, tiny dimensions, they can distort the electric field and create so-called Coulomb discharge, little sparks, invisible sparks. Because
this is fascinating, because what I'm hearing here is that meteors generally are not being, maybe just as they fly across the sky, the height that they fly across the sky and the time that it would take a sonic boom to reach the Earth, this may not be the traditional sound waves. You're talking about something, what, in the radio frequency type energy?
Yes, I'm talking about frequencies, radio frequencies, the frequencies of electromagnetic radiation similar to audio frequencies. So it's frequencies that you can hear. So if this electric field oscillates with, let's say, 500 hertz, and then it oscillates an object on the ground with the same frequency, you can hear 500 hertz. For example, my voice right now is between 500 hertz and 1 kilohertz. A whistle would be 2, 3 kilohertz, something like that. Yeah. The sound that you heard, this pop, boom, was when I run it through a software for analyzing for a spectrum of the sound, it was about 200 hertz, 100 hertz.
Well, Dan, I'd like to remind the listeners of TeenTalkNetwork.com to also go to the Dr. Sky website, because right now I've done a complete compilation of the 2001 Leonids, including this video and audio clip of the sighting that was made by Rob Krakowski here in Phoenix, and a complete analysis of the other radio network, the Coast to Coast AM radio program, for everybody to enjoy. But one of the things that I'm fascinated about, being that this program is geared to children and young adults, as a graduate student, before we get into any other information, if you'd be kind enough just to tell us where your passion for astronomy came from, and how when you were a young person you got to move on to wanting to become an astronomer, and any helpful hints you'd have for the young people listening to this show.
Oh, yeah, that's that may be interesting for young people to hear, because, for example, there's lots of young students asking me the same question, especially in Croatia, and but also here. And my story goes as follows. I always knew a year or 2 years before big decisions in my life what I want in my life, and that was a big advantage. For example, when I was in high school, I was good in math, in third year of high school, I decided to switch to physics. And that time I knew that I'm going to study physics, but I switched to physics not because of astronomy or astrophysics, but because elementary particles. I was fascinated by small particles and these little elements of the matter and
in
world
physics, traditionally.
Sorry?
In physics, in other words, the particle physics. And
But then when I became a physics student, I didn't like this thing very much, and it was second year of undergraduate study that I was introduced to astronomy for the first time, to people who actually study astronomy in more professional way. They're amateur astronomers, but there was little observatory in Croatia where I looked through a telescope first time in my life, and immediately I fell in love with astronomy. And then I realized that the most of the things that young people do in their life is to follow somebody else's advice. And then I realized that if I want to achieve in my life what I really want, then I should somehow shape my own destiny. So I was very much involved into small projects, student projects. I was searching for an interesting topic to study. So I was not waiting for somebody else to tell me, okay, do this project, do that project. And that's the general advice that I would give to young people.
Yes.
And it's not related to science, but it's related to life in general. Just be curious. Look for interesting stuff. When you see something interesting, study it a little bit. You don't need to go very deep into something to realize that it's either interesting or boring for you. In this case, I found astrophysics extremely interesting to me, but not astronomy in the beginning, because I was very sloppy with instruments. Hmm. I almost burned a CCD camera at that observatory. The chief of the observatory was very angry, but after a couple of days he said, okay.
So we all have to learn. We all make mistakes.
Yeah, and that's the point. You have to learn, you have to try, you have to make your hands dirty in some way. And then, when I graduated, I decided to pursue my career in astrophysics. And then I was just searching for a place where I can continue my quest in some way. I had a friend of mine who graduated from University of Kentucky, and he gave good reference to my current advisor, and that's how I came here. And when I came here to the United States, I immediately realized that there is a lot of opportunities around me. So this study of meteors started actually when I arrived in the United States, because a couple of my friends in Croatia decided to go to Mongolia to observe the meteors, and I joined them in that project. And after 4 years of this work, I can say that we went through all possible things in a project that you can face. And that's interesting, because this is not a project that involves really big money. It's a small project.
It
gains a lot of scientific results, and the most interesting thing is that you can learn, still as a graduate student or an undergraduate student, you can learn how science works, because we made a lot of mistakes when we are organizing the expedition, things like that, and you learn when you're doing it. That's how things go in life, right? And so when you do projects like this, you learn things that you would usually learn when you have your PhD, when you get big money, and so that you do not need to make the same mistakes later on in your life.
So you're saying don't be afraid to make mistakes and carry on to learn.
Exactly.
Now, where has your research taken you in your area of astrophysics? Of all the areas, am I correct to assume that your study of fireballs and meteor astronomy is one of the key areas of interest to you?
Not exactly, because nobody can afford this study of electronic sound as a major project. because it's very risky business. Let me put it this way: very risky business for a scientist to put his best cards on that project, because you depend on a phenomenon which is so rare and so unpredictable that you may find yourself after now 4 or 5 years of work nowhere without any results. So my major field of study are young stars. I'm actually developing some models for radiative transfer in astrophysical dust. That means that I calculate how energy redistributes itself around stars, young stars, in the dust, and that's one interesting connection. I'm in this astrophysics project, major project, I'm studying dust around young stars, and comets and meteors are nothing else than this very old and primitive dust in the solar system that burns in Earth's atmosphere, because meteors are just little chunks of comets.
Right. That's really on the comet.
Yeah. Right. So in some way, these two projects are related to this dust, because in one project, I'm studying dust around stars. These young stars like our sun 5 billion years ago, and all of us are formed of these stars. All of us were dust and these little chunks of comets. 5 billion years ago, and thanks to this dust, we exist today, and we talk today in this show. But we still can sample this dust whenever we watch the sky and see these meteors burning.
Well, this is a fascinating subject, and I wanted to see in the time remaining if you might be able to explain to us, Dan, the connection that you see. What can we expect? Let's say in research that you're conducting here on. What may be these sounds? I mean, just in summation, what may be the real cause or culprit? Is this the ionosphere of the Earth that's being disturbed? Because I've heard of people telling me that the auroras seemingly have made sounds, and people have at least eyewitness accounts of that.
Mm-hmm. There are two separate physical processes that you have to include in this picture of electrophonic sounds. First process is the way how to create this electromagnetic disturbance. And right now, we do not have any idea how these meteors and the Leonid that you heard was probably big like the palm of your hand.
Yes.
So it's not big, and it burns at altitude of 70 kilometers. The atmosphere, that altitude is so rare that in a lab we call this vacuum. So meteor is tiny piece of very fragile material is able to create enormous electromagnetic disturbance on a large scale, and simply we don't know what physics we have to include to explain this. The other process that you need in this picture is the way how to create sounds from this electric disturbance.
Yes.
And that involves some other things in physics, and that's more or less simple if you have an electric field strong enough to initiate some physical processes like vibration of objects or corona discharge. So once when you have an electric field strong enough for these physical processes, then you're fine with this part of the picture. The problem is the physics of creation of the electromagnetic disturbance, and in case of auroras, that's very well known process, because auroras are a large scale phenomenon where you have charged particles hitting the Earth's atmosphere, disturbing the ionosphere, things like that. So, and there has been a lot of study in the field of auroras. However, the field of electronic sounds from meteors, we are in many ways pioneers in this experimental approach. Because when we went to Mongolia 3 years ago to study Leonids, we designed our equipment in such a way to target this phenomenon, sound and electromagnetic disturbance, things like that. So in some way, we are trying to initiate much larger research in this field, hoping that other people will join us with better instruments, with more instruments, with more observations and things like that.
Well, you're very exciting, and I first want to thank you for joining me here on the Teen Talk Network radio program, teentalknetwork.com with the Dr. Sky Show. And I'd like to thank our very special guest today, Mr. Dejan Vinkovich, who is a graduate student at the University of Kentucky, as he proceeds to move on to a PhD in astrophysics. And we wish you well, sir, and look
thank
forward
you.
To staying in touch with you. And also, if you'd be kind enough to tell us your website that more people can learn about what you're doing in research.
I'm collecting witness reports of these sounds because the phenomenon is still rare and any witness report is very valuable for us. So the website is gefs@ccs.ucky.edu, or you can send us an email to gefs@ccs.ucky.edu.
Very good. Well, I thank you again, Mr. Vinkovich, and look forward to staying in touch with you.
Thank you for
inviting
me.
We'd like to get a further analysis of our sighting and hope that this has been helpful. You're listening to TeenTalkNetwork.com. I'm Steve Cates, Dr. Sky, with the Dr. Sky Show, encouraging you to always keep your eyes to the skies and stay tuned in weeks to come for more exciting guests from the world of astronomy, space, aviation, and weather, the movers and shapers of technology. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll talk to you next week.